We thank you for all that you've done for us, and we thank you for allowing us to come together to fellowship, to congregate. Father Yahweh, we pray that you may help us in our own walks to seek you first and foremost, to be found worthy of your word and your calling. May you help each one of us grow and overcome our weaknesses, Father, for we know that we all have weaknesses and we all battle the flesh in one way or the other. So be with us, Father. Help us to overcome, and when we fall, may you have mercy and pity upon us, and remember that our frame, as David once said, is but dust, Father Yahweh. Father, we thank you now, and we dedicate this service to you. We thank you for all the blessings, and we pray that you may continue to be with us and help us along the way, and put within us a deep desire to follow you, to search out your word, and to always stay committed to your truth. And we ask this in Yahshua's name. Hallelujah. I'd like to welcome everybody here. I'd like to welcome our guests. Awfully nice to see the Hewitts back, and awfully nice also to see Mike and Cheryl. It's a blessing to have you here. I'd also like to add an extended welcome to those on the internet, and also those who may receive this message in the future on DVD or audio cassette. Or most of you know that I have somewhat of a passion when it comes to creation I've developed in the last few years. And there's very few things I find more annoying than evolution. And since I'm not going to give an evolution message at the feast, I thought I'd get out of my system now, this Sabbath. Think about, really, what is the basic belief of evolution? What is the very basic belief of evolution? Well, the basic belief of evolution, there is no creator. There is absolutely no creator. And we are here all on our own, by chance alone. Billions and billions and billions of years of chance. But the main theme is there's no creator. There's no creator. Evolution is the most detrimental, so-called scientific theory known to man, I believe. From a faith perspective, there is no greater enemy to our young people than for this theory called evolution. Evolution states that there is no creator, that there is no one to obey, that there is no one to live your life for, that there is no one greater than you. And that is the harm of evolution. There is no one greater than you, because Yahweh does not exist. Evolution believes that there is no creator again, that our Father in heaven is a myth. In some ways, modern Darwinian macroevolution is Satan's greatest tool to turn the hearts and minds of the people away from their maker. And I truly believe that. Think about it. If we simply evolved through billions and billions and billions of years, as they like to propose, through change and mutation, what's to stop us from living as we will? By doing what we want to do. Because there's no creator. There's no standard. There's no law. There's no law governing this universe, and there's no law governing mankind. You know, what's really sad about evolution, or evolution, as I've said in the past, is how it's mandated and taught in public schools today. You know, I can remember when I first heard evolution, middle school, 7th or 8th grade, I believe. And I was confused. And I was born in the faith. And I was confused. Because it's a fact that we came from a blob 4-point-something billion years ago. It's a fact. But they mandate this in schools. For instance, in Wisconsin, a legislator and several professors are trying to force evolution and banning intelligent design. I'm going to read just two paragraphs here from this article. It's from the Baptist Press, February 8th, 2006. The title is "Wisconsin Legislator University Professors Want Ban on Intelligent Design in Public Schools." Says, in an unprecedented political move to protect evolution, the Wisconsin state representative, backed by 13 professors from the University of Wisconsin, has introduced a bill that could ban the teaching of intelligent design and creationism in the state's public schools. The bill would stipulate that any material presented as science within the school curriculum is testable, like evolution is testable as a scientific hypothesis and describes only natural processes. In other words, you can't have a creator, and is consistent with any description of definition of science adopted by the National Academy of Sciences. So here we have some legislators, we have some professors trying not only to strengthen evolution in the public school, but trying to ban intelligent design. And the reason is intelligent design cannot be tested, cannot be verified, cannot be validated. Or I'm here to tell you today that neither can evolution. Neither can evolution. They are afraid. And this is what it comes down to. We're seeing a lot of this in the news now. Intelligent design. A lot of schools are adopting intelligent design within its curriculum. But there's a fight. Why? Because these evolutionists know that there's a lot of contradictions. That there's a lot of contradictions that they can't explain. And intelligent design makes sense. And they're afraid. They're afraid, they're concerned that their precious evolution will be proved wrong. That the contradictions will come to light. But there's another reason why people so adamantly hold on to evolution. A man named Richard Lewontin, a staunch atheist, in a book entitled Billions and Billions of Demons, page 31, says this. Now listen to this. Pay attention to what this man says. He says, quote, "We take the side of science in spite of a patent absurdity of some of its constructs. In spite of its failure to fulfill many of the extravagant promises of health and life, in spite of the tolerance of the scientific community for unsubstantiated stories, because we have a prior commitment, a commitment to materialism. It is not that the methods and institutions of science somehow compel us to accept a material explanation of phenomenal world, but on the contrary, that we are forced by our adherence to material cause to create an apparatus of investigation and set of concepts that produce material explanations, no matter how counterintuitive, no matter how mystifying to the uninitiated. Moreover, that materialism is an absolute. Why? He says, for we cannot allow the divine foot in the door. That's the reason for evolution. That's the reason why these staunch evolutionists promote so strongly, because they're afraid, because they want nothing at all to do with our Creator. So they introduce this concept called evolution. And again, this man admits, you have two alternatives. You have evolution, we got here by nothing, and we have a Creator, which created us in His wisdom. And they refuse to accept the latter. They refuse to accept the second alternative. Why? Because that would acknowledge a creator. And as we find here, this man simply, and most simply, will not do this. He's not alone. German biologist and prominent evolutionist, Homer von Dutferth, says this. Critically speaking, we can say that somebody who accepts the modern science of nature has no other alternative than to say yes, because he aims to explain natural phenomena by means that are understandable and tries to derive them from the laws of nature without reverting, listen to this, without reverting to supernatural interference. So again, the purpose is they want to explain this through some natural cause, and that is why they must accept evolution. It's not because evolution explains how we got here. It's full of contradictions. They know this. We know it. But they must, because to accept the other, again, would be to accept a creator. Bottom line, people rather believe in a lie than to believe in a creator. You know, we see this in other arenas of religion, too. People rather hold on to old traditions than to let go and take hold of the truth. But people rather believe a lie than to believe in a creator. And that's the bottom line. You know, think about it again. Without a creator, we are completely free to live and do as we will. There is nothing stopping us. There is nothing saying, no, don't do this. There's no, thou shall not. There's no hindrance. There's no wall. We can do, we can live, we can do whatever we want. Why? Because there is no creator. There is no law governing this universe. We got here all on our own. There's no law. There's nothing here. So really, in this world, we have two worldviews. We have an evolutionary worldview, and we have a scriptural creation worldview. Now, I pulled this from thinkquest.org, and here is their explanation of evolution, how the universe evolved. It says, according to this theory, at the beginning of the universe, the whole matter of the universe was once concentrated in an extremely dense and hot fireball. Some people call this the primeval atom. Then about 20 billion years ago, a vast explosion occurred, Big Bang. The matter was broken into pieces, which was thrown out with high speed in all directions, forming stars and galaxies, which are still moving away from one another. Now that's the evolutionary explanation of how this universe evolved. And I want to stop here for just a moment before pursuing the creation explanation. Why? Because we want to focus on something here. You notice they began with this fireball, as it says here, or this primeval atom. Where did this fireball come from? I've never heard anybody define or say or explain where this primeval atom or this fireball that was part of the Big Bang came from. Where did this originate from? Well, they don't know, and they can't give you an answer. They'll say, or where did Yahweh come from? Or, you know. But they can't answer their own question because we don't know. There's no explanation. We're basically, we have two alternatives. Number one, somebody put it there. Or number two, we have eternal energy and matter. It's always existed. Now, science has proven in the last several years that the universe does have a beginning. They know that scientifically. They can watch, I assume, somehow they can determine that the universe had a beginning. Prior to this, it was always believed by the majority of scientists that the universe was eternal. It's always been here. Well, that's been proven wrong, but they still can't explain where this primeval atom came from. Who put it here? Or has it always been here? Or how can that be? You know, it's amazing. They will denounce the notion of an eternal being, a creator, because he had to have always existed. He's eternal. And they denounce it for that reason. But yet at the same time, they will uphold an eternal energy and matter. They will uphold this eternal primeval atom that was part of the Big Bang. But again, it makes no sense, and this is just one of many contradictions in evolution. We're going to see many contradictions today. Turn to Genesis chapter 1 with me. Let's start in the beginning. Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 says, "In the beginning, Elohim created the heavens and the earth. And the earth had become waste and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of Elohim moved upon the face of the waters. And Elohim said, let there be light, and there was light. And Elohim saw the light, and it was good. And Elohim divided the light from the darkness, and Elohim called the light day, and the darkness he called it night. And there was evening, and there was morning, one day." So here is the beginning of creation. And it says here that Elohim made the heavens and the earth. So what do we have here? We have on one side a creator, all intelligent, all-knowing, creating the heavens and earth. And then again, on the other side, we have eternal energy, eternal matter. You know, what makes more sense? What requires more faith? So this is the account of creation, that Yahweh created the heavens and the earth. Turn to Nehemiah. We're going to look at a few passages here. Nehemiah chapter 9, and verse 6. Nehemiah chapter 9, verse 6. You are Yahweh, even you alone. You have made heaven the heaven of heavens with all their host, the earth and all things that are in it, the seas and all that is in them. And you preserve them all, and the host of heaven worships you. So again, here we find scripturally that Yahweh made the heavens and the earth. So again, we're faced with two different worldviews. One side we have, again, eternal energy, eternal matter. On the other side, we have an all-powerful, all-knowing, all-wise creator. You know, some people say that religion is a faith and evolution is science. So I have a bone to pick with that. That first half is right. Religion is a faith. There are certain things I can't prove to you scripturally. Like, does Yahweh exist? Well, I believe he does. I think we have indication that he does by what we see around us. But I can't show you Yahweh. We have faith. We believe. We have faith. So faith is certainly part of religion. You can't have religion without faith. You see what I mean? You must have both. But is evolution any different? Were you there when that Big Bang occurred? Or where's the proof? How do you know? Well, you have faith. You believe. But there's no provable observation. There's nothing that we can look at or we can test to substantiate the Big Bang. They're both a faith, religion and evolution. And really, both are a religion, which we're going to see here in just a few minutes. Turn to Psalms chapter 102. Psalms 102, again, substantiating what we've already seen. But I wanted to press upon you, who is the one responsible? Psalms 102, verse 25. It says there, "Of old did you lay the foundations of the earth, and the heavens are the work of your hands." So we find here that Yahweh himself, that Yahweh, it is his doing, it is his will, it is his work that we see what we do today. It was his doing. This is Yahweh's creation. Jeremiah chapter 51 and verse 15. It says there, "He has made the earth by his power. He has established the world by his wisdom, and by his understanding has he stretched out the heavens." And it's amazing because that's exactly what science is now saying, that the whole expanse of the heavens was stretched out in some way. Science is amazing. The clean foods, where now science is finally catching up to Yahweh's word. You hear more and more about how we're not to eat pork for this reason and that reason. Well, this is the same thing here. Yahweh quoted this. Yahweh spoke this thousands of years ago. And here science is now finally saying, you know, the universe does have a beginning. And you know, it does look like the universe was stretched out at one point. So we find here that science really validates Scripture. But here we find that Yahweh, again, is responsible. Turn to Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 3. This is called the faith chapter. And here in verse 3 it says, "By faith we understand that the worlds have been framed by the word of Yahweh, so that what is seen has not been made out of things which do appear." So again, Scripture says that by faith we believe. Because we have no concrete evidence. We weren't there. We have no proof to substantiate our belief, but yet we believe. We have faith that it was Yahweh's doing, it was his hand who framed the worlds in this universe. Now again, who believes that science and evolution is compatible and that evolution is not faith? You know, those who believe this, those who believe that evolution is science, they have a rude awakening when they stand before the Creator. Again, which requires more faith? And that's really my question with these passages here. Which requires more faith? A belief in an all-knowing, all-powerful Creator that's always existed and will always exist? Or an eternal ball of energy and Mass? Or which one? Which one makes more sense? Or we know which one makes more sense. What's amazing also about evolution is that Yahweh's word seems to speak to this unholy theory. Turn to Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1, verse 21. Here Paul is writing to the people in Rome. And in verse 21, we read, "Because that knowing Yahweh, they did not glorify him as Yahweh, neither gave thanks, but listen to this, but became vain in their reasonings, and their senseless heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools, and changed the glory of the incorruptible Elohim for the likeness of an image of corruptible man, and of birds, and of four-footed beasts, and creeping things." Now, who does this remind you of? When you read this, who do you think of? Well, I'll tell you who I think of. Modern academics, modern academia. These professors that believe they know so much. They know so much. Again, Paul says, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. They believe that they know where this universe derived from. But in their wisdom, they have become fools. This is true for most college professors. They are vain in their reasoning. And through their knowledge, and through their education, and through their intellect, they have become fools because they've rejected Almighty Yahweh's word. Now, verse 23 doesn't sound like evolution. I'm not sure what would. I'm going to read this one more time. It says, "Changed the glory of the incorruptible Elohim for the likeness of an image of corruptible man and of birds and of four-footed beasts." This is precisely what evolution does. It removes Yahweh's Elohim. And it puts that emphasis then on man. It puts the emphasis on the creation rather than the Creator. Evolution basically teaches that by the fact that there is no higher power, that there is no creator, that there is no intelligent designer, that we are our own Elohim, that we are mighty ones. Isn't this amazing? And almost 2,000 years ago, Paul understood what was to come through Yahweh's Spirit, through Yahweh's inspiration, but he understood. I believe he knew this is a prophecy of our day. He wasn't alone, though. Peter also spoke to this. Turn to 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 5. 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 5. And it says there, "For this they willfully forget." Now pay attention to that. I'm going to repeat it. "They willfully forget that there were heavens from of old, and an earth compacted out of water, and by means of water, by the word of Yahweh." Now the Amplified Bible reads, "For they willfully overlook and forget this fact, that the heavens came into existence long ago by the word of Elohim, and that the earth also which was formed out of water and by means of water." So you see, people, they don't want to believe in a creator. It says here that people rather knowingly believe a lie than to believe in a creator, than to believe a maker. Here's what it says. Isn't that amazing? That Peter, 2,000 years ago, wrote that people would knowingly forget. That they would knowingly and willfully forget that there's a creator. I find that amazing. Amazing how it ties into evolution and supports the contradictions. It's almost as if Paul and Peter could see this day coming during their ministry. You know, evolution is nothing more than, I believe, a fulfillment of prophecy. It's a fulfillment of what was written long ago. And I believe certainly needed, perhaps, to bring in the man of sin so the parts can fall in place. The Bible said that people would willfully forget that Yahweh made the heavens and the earth. And that's what we see today. That's what these instructors are teaching our children every day. Every day. And you know what? You say, my kid is fine. My kid will be able to distinguish, will be able to decipher truth from error. I'm here to tell you that's not always the case. And it's a very dangerous belief, more dangerous than what many people give credit to. Something that we need to be alert and need to understand and need to certainly be aware of. Now I want to focus now on the question, is evolution science? We've talked about it. I've alluded to the fact that it's a religion and not science. Science must contain three components. Dr. Jeremy Walter, PhD in mechanical engineering from Pennsylvania State University, says this: the human enterprise of seeking accurately and quantitatively the nature and processes of our universe through observation, hypothesis, and experimental validation. So for something to be called science, it must contain these three components. A, it must be observed. B, it must have a hypothesis, a guess, normally an educated guess. And it must be able to be validated some way, tested in a laboratory or some other means. The only criteria that evolution seems to fit, and this is questionable, is a hypothesis. Again, because that's an educated guess. So I don't see much education when it comes to evolution. But there's no observation. There's no validation. Now keep in mind, when I speak of evolution, when most people speak of evolution, they're referring to Darwinian evolution or macroevolution. There's a difference. We do see evolution in some forms. But the evolution people speak of is an ape turning into a human. Or the one I find ridiculous in the Darwin's book is supposedly a whale turned into a bear. It's all just nonsense. Nonsense. When you start looking at Darwin's beliefs and how these animals evolved from one another, it's just nonsense. And I know deep down people don't believe it. But it's amazing to me how many people just keep silent about it. They don't say a word. It's like it's a minor issue. And I just don't understand that. Because at the core of the message, we are saying Yahweh does not exist. I don't understand why people don't become more passionate. They don't take more of a role. But they don't. Most people don't. They just don't see this as important. Dr. John Kramer, PhD in biochemistry from the University of Minnesota, said this: no one has ever demonstrated macroevolutionary changes on a molecular level. Yet many people speculate evolutionary links between bacteria, plants, animals, and man. So according to this Dr. Kramer, macroevolution has never been observed or demonstrated. It's never been seen. It's never been validated. So again, if this is the case, how can we call evolution science? It can't even hold up to its own scrutiny. How can we call this unholy theory science? Or we can't. If you consider evolution for what it is, it's nothing more than a religion. It's a religion that we believe in nothing. So it's a religion of nothing. But it's not a theory. It's not scientific. There's nothing scientific about it. If you look at the root and if you look at the evidence, there's nothing scientific about evolution. You know, one of the things Darwin really emphasized during his campaign, you might say, is the fossil record. And this man, he thought for sure that the fossil record would substantiate his claim. He thought, give it enough time, we're going to find all these links between these species, and we're going to be able to trace how the ape turned into a monkey, or the ape turned into the human, and all these other evolutionary changes. But you know what? Amazingly, we're no closer today than we were 150 years ago. Why? Because it's a lie. Here's what Charles Darwin in The Origin of Species said, 1872, he wrote this. He says, geology assuredly does not reveal any such finely graduated organic chain, or at least he admitted it then. But, he says, and this perhaps is the most obvious and serious objection which can be urged against the theory. The explanation lies, as I believe, in the extreme imperfection of the geological record. So what he was saying is, we just haven't found the evidence. It's there. It's there, but we just haven't found the evidence. But he admitted that when he wrote the book, when he taught this theory that there was no evidence in the fossil record to support it. There is no evidence to support this belief. And again, we are 130 years out later from when Darwin wrote this. And again, no evidence in the fossil record. If anything, we've seen the opposite. Because we have much more evidence. We have much more of a record in geology than we had in Darwin's time. And again, no new evidence. You would think, as hard as people want to support this and prove this theory, that they would present anything. And they have. They found a pig's tooth one time and they made a whole caveman out of it. But that's another story. I mean, they're looking, but it can't be found. And it won't be found because the evidence doesn't exist. Here's another prominent atheist, Robert Carroll, and in the book Patterns and Processes of Vertebrate Evolution from Cambridge University. Here's what he says on page 25. Despite more than 100 years of intense collecting efforts, so he recognizes they've been looking, they've been making an effort, but they can't find it. He says, intense collecting efforts since the time of Darwin's death, the fossil record still does not yield the picture of infinitely numerous transitional links that he expected. What is he saying? There's no evidence. There's no proof to support Darwin's theory from the fossil record. And this is where he hinged most of his hope on, the fossil record. And, you know, these evolutionists, they know there's no evidence there, but they continue to teach it. Because, again, what's the alternative? If you ever ask yourself why they teach evolution, ask yourself, what's the alternative? And you will have your answer. The alternative is a creator. And that is what most people refuse to accept. So again, we find another contradiction in evolution. Supposedly, we would find all this evidence in the fossil record. We found none. None. To support Darwin's theory, but people continue to hold on to this old, antiquated belief. Again, when it comes to evolution, as Peter said, people are ignorant on purpose. Some minister once said that they're stupid on purpose, how he defined 2 Peter 3:5. Certainly, that would be a proper definition. They are stupid on purpose. They know better, but they refuse to acknowledge a creator. Now, another law that contradicts evolution is the second law of thermodynamics. And this law basically says that everything over time breaks down. Things over time become less complex. They don't evolve like evolution states. Or here's what Dr. John Kimball, a PhD in aeronautics from the California Institute of Technology, says about this law. He says, quote, a formal definition of the second law of thermodynamics is as any closed system, a process proceeds in a direction such that the unavailable energy increases. Notice unavailable energy. In other words, in any closed system, the amount of disorder always increases with time. Things progress naturally from order to disorder or from an available energy state to one where energy is more available. So here's one law of science that seems to be applied to everything but for evolution. This is an accepted law of science. They apply this to almost everything in the scientific community but for evolution. And somehow evolution is exempt, I guess. Evolution states that over time, everything in this universe became more complex. You were a blob of slime 4 billion years ago. Now you stand as this complex human being. What's evolution? The second law of thermodynamics says that over time, you will break down and you will die. Do you see a contradiction here? They don't jive. Dr. Don DeYoung, PhD in physics from Iowa State University, here's how he defines this law. The second basic law of nature also involves energy. It describes unavoidable losses in any process whatsoever, which involves a transfer of energy. The energy does not disappear, but some always becomes unavailable, often as unusable heat. Stated in another way, everything breaks down and becomes less ordered with time. Ultimately, says that death itself is a consequence of the second law of thermodynamics. So according to Dr. DeYoung, this law of thermodynamics is even responsible for death. That again, everything breaks down. Everything breaks down. We don't see things becoming more complex over time. We see things breaking down. Again, how can this contradiction be explained when it comes to evolution? It can't. So people simply ignore it. Or they try to justify it, saying somehow this was exempt, even though we've seen this law, we can test this law with everything in this universe. But somehow this was exempt with evolution. But again, one of the very basic, understood, applied laws of science contradicts the very notion of evolution. Because again, nothing over time becomes more complex. You give me an example of something over time becoming more complex. Show me an amoeba that will become a human being 4 billion years from now. How in the world could that be possible? I heard one scientist, creationist, say we can put a frog in a blender, we can turn the blender on, blend all the frog up, we have all the molecules, everything we have to create life. Or how many years do you think it's going to take for that frog to evolve into another frog? Or it's not going to happen because of the second law of thermodynamics. It's not going to happen. We'll move on now to the law of biogenesis. Biogenesis. And basically this, all this is life creates life. And again, this is an understood and an acceptable law of science. Here's what the American Heritage Dictionary says. The principle that living organisms develop only from other living organisms, not from non-living matter. So it stipulates it can't evolve from non-living matter. The American Heritage Stedman's Medical Dictionary defines biogenesis as the principle that life originates from pre-existing life and not from non-living material. Now, the law of biogenesis again states that life begets life, that life cannot come from a non-living source. Now, remind me, what does evolution teach again? That life came from non-life. Very good. Life came from non-life. Or do you see another contradiction? I see another contradiction. Evolution states again that from this lifeless energy and matter that we evolved into this complex human being. Again, this law applies, it seems, to every area of science besides evolution. And I guess evolution's exempt. Now, why is it that a theory so full of contradictions can be taught to our young people as fact? Why is it? Why is this? And as we saw, many organizations, including the all-powerful ACLU, which we all should be familiar with, you know, does its best to keep the Bible out and Darwin in. Now, they have their reasoning. What's even more amazing to me is how many Bible-believing folks, again, do nothing about it. If there's anything that bothers me about Christianity today, it's the fact that they do nothing, by and large. I know there's a lot of good people that strive to do something, but as a religion, they do nothing. You don't hear anymore from the pulpit how we're to repent, how Yahweh exists, how abortion is wrong. You don't hear these things from the pulpits anymore. Why? Or they want members, number one, I guess. And they don't want to. This is the age of not offending people. Or, you know what, if I offend people, so what? I don't care. Because this is Yahweh's word. And you know what, that should be our attitude. First and foremost, we should put Yahweh first. And if we refuse, and if we ignore that, then we're not worthy of Him. You see, we must put him first no matter what the consequences. And again, it just amazes me how many people in nominal worship, Christianity, will refuse to do absolutely nothing. And you know what? I guess a sacred name, too, is to blame. Because we oftentimes do nothing. And it's time that we as Yahweh's people take a stand for what's right. I want to look at another, not a law of science, but the rule of mutations. This is proof that they use quite often. They will say, we just mutated, you know, billions and billions, of, only by chance. Somehow we mutated with natural selection, which we're going to get to. But what's amazing about mutations, which many people don't understand, is mutations never add genetic information. Did you understand that? Mutations never add genetic information. That's so important to understand when talking to an evolutionist or an atheist. They don't add information. Here's what Dr. John Kramer, PhD in biochemistry, again from the University of Minnesota, says, changes, mutations observed on a molecular level, such as DNA, are predominantly disruptive and always with loss of, not gain in, information and complexity. So we find that mutations only take away and are disruptive to the process of change. They don't add. They don't add to anything. Dr. Errol Roth, PhD in biology from the University of Michigan, says mutations are not a great breakthrough for evolution. They are almost always detrimental, and as such, are more representative of a mechanism for degeneration than for advancement. They understand that. It's an instrument, it's a mechanism that destroys. It causes degeneration. Dr. Stephen Taylor, PhD in electrical engineering from the University of Liverpool, says this, for large-scale evolution, mutations must, on average, add information. So he's saying for evolution to be true, most often mutations would have to add information. In a recent book, biophysicist Dr. Lee Spitner shows with detailed analysis that this is completely precluded. He examines a classic textbook cases of mutations cited in favor of neo-Darwinism evolution and shows conclusively that without exception, they are all losses of information. There's no such thing as a mutation that adds information. None. So keep in mind again, mutation never, never, never adds information. For Darwinian evolution to happen, mutations must be possible, and they must add information. But again, this doesn't happen. This doesn't happen. We can prove this today. So why are people still believing this? Would they rather not believe in a creator? The problem is, for evolution, for Darwin, mutation is another contradiction. According to Dr. Roth, again, mutation is a mechanism of degeneration. It's important to understand this point because Darwin's theory depends on thousands and millions of successful mutations. And if it doesn't add information, it can't happen. It can't happen. It must add information. You understand that? I mean, I think out of every proof, all the proof against evolution, possibly the rule of mutation is the worst for them because it doesn't happen. It can't happen. Who would add that genetic information? Things evolve when they lose some sort of data. They don't evolve by an addition of information. I want to now focus on natural selection. Now, this is a key component to Darwinian evolution, and some of this is true. Simply means survival of the fittest, basically. Natural selection, the strong will survive, the weak will die off. But he couples this with mutations in billions and billions and billions and billions and billions and billions of years. But the problem is, natural selection will serve as more of a detriment than a benefit. Here's what Dr. Errol Roth again says about natural selection. The problem is that the very system of natural selection which Darwin proposed will tend to eliminate the interdependent parts of complex systems as these systems develop. The parts do not function until all the interdependent parts are present and the system works and provides some survival value to the organism. Again, survival of the fittest. That's what natural selection is. So natural selection, according to Dr. Roth, would only serve as a detriment. It would only serve to break down what evolution would build up. Did you understand what she said? Simply that as these components build, natural selection and its tendency will break down what is built because there is no survival benefit there. For instance, what's the benefit of an eye socket without an eye to see with? Natural selection is going to rid itself of that eye socket because there's no eye. The same thing goes with any other part that would be useless without the others. It must serve some sort of function. Otherwise, it's more of a hindrance. It's more of a hindrance because, again, natural selection will only assist when there's some sort of survival ability. And again, that's just not going to happen. Here's what Dr. Jerry Bergman, PhD in human biology from Columbia Pacific University, says. Without complex mechanisms to achieve these tasks, life cannot exist. The parts could not evolve separately and could not even exist interdependently for very long because they would break down in the environment without protection. Even if they existed, the many parts needed for life could not sit idle waiting for the other parts to evolve because the existing ones would usually deteriorate very quickly from the effects of dehydration, oxidation, and the action of bacteria and other pathogens. So he's saying they couldn't sit there. I know my biology professor got up one day and said the human cell for mitosis is a process of reproduction of the cell, how it divides and populates. But it took the first human cell, supposedly, if I remember right, it was 4 million years. It was in the millions. Well, what did that cell do all that time sitting there, learning how to go through this process called mitosis? Or what? You know, as this Dr. Jerry Bergman points out, I mean, the elements would have destroyed this cell. So it's not possible. It's not possible. He goes on and says, for this very reason, only an instantaneous creation of all the necessary parts as a functioning unit can provide life. So again, natural selection and years of chance alone can't explain life. It can't do it. For life to exist, life must be complete. You can't put an arm over here and a leg over here and a brain over here and, you know, a volume of blood over here and anticipate that all that will survive on its own. It doesn't work that way. You need all the parts working together at the same time. And if you don't have that, what's going to happen to that arm over there or the leg? It's going to die. You will die because you need and must be complete. I want to read one more source here, George Javer, PhD in biochemistry from Columbia University. It says, within live cells, we see numerous series of interconnected chemical conversations that are functioning uninterrupted. The absence of any component of these complex systems of chemical changes will cause defective operation or even death to the cell. It is reasonable, then, to suppose that when living cells were first brought into existence, all of their components must have been present and functioning. Same idea here. For us to survive, we must be complete. We can't come out half done and survive. And that's all this doctor is saying. But notice, and something we're not going to really look at, something I'd like to do a message on in the future perhaps, but how detailed the human cell is. It's amazing. Have you ever looked at the human cell? It is truly amazing, and we're learning more and more and more every day about how these different parts work together. They say it's almost like a city. You have different components working with other components. So it's almost like cars going down a road. You have these stoplights, and somehow they can signal to these different components in the human cell. This is all within the little cell that's invisible to the human eye. It's amazing. It's amazing. So we're not talking about an arm. Let's drill down here to the human cell and look at the evidence. I want to look at now the next area here, and I believe I'm going to close with after looking at this and maybe looking at Job, but the complexity of life, the complexity of life. If there is anything that shows reason for a designer, a creator, it is life itself. You know, Paul talked about that. Paul talked about that. He talked how through nature we can see Yahweh's work. We can see that Yahweh exists. Matter of fact, let's turn back there for just a moment here. I just want to read this one passage, Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1. In verse 19 it says, "Because that which is known of Yahweh is manifest in them, for Yahweh manifested it to them. For the invisible things of Him since the creation of the world are clearly seen, being perceived through the things that are made, even His everlasting power and majesty, that they may be without excuse." And notice that. It's such a powerful statement. "So that they may be without excuse." So what we see around us, the heavens, the earth, the trees, the grass, us, it all shows and proves that there's a creator, that there's a creator much greater than us. I want to read a few quotes here, just showing how complex life really is. The first is from a Dr. Jonathan Sephardi, PhD in physical chemistry from Victoria University. And here's what he says about the DNA. "Living things have by far the most compact information storage retrieval system known. To illustrate further, the amount of information that could be stored in a pinhead's volume of DNA is staggering. It is the equivalent information content of a pile of paperback books 500 times as tall as the distance from the Earth to the Sun, each with a different yet specific content." So we have enough. In a pinhead's volume of DNA, we have enough information, which is just stacked because I work with computers. You know, I know something about storage. And this is beyond human understanding. 500 times the distance from the Earth to the Moon if it was in paperback books. Isn't that amazing? And it's in just a little tiny pinhead of a pen. It's amazing. Where Dr. John Marcus, PhD in biological chemistry from the University of Michigan, says this: "If the DNA of one human cell was unraveled and held in a straight line, it would literally be almost 1 meter long and yet be so thin that it would be invisible to all but the most powerful microscopes. Consider that this string of DNA must be packaged into a space that is smaller than the head of a pin, and that this tiny string of human DNA contains enough information to fill," now listen to this, "to fill almost 1,000 books, each containing 1,000 pages. That's how much information is in the head of a pen with our DNA. Isn't that staggering? Isn't that amazing? I just find it beyond fascinating that Yahweh is able and capable of doing this. And what's amazing about this is we can read in Romans that His creation testifies of His existence, but it seems that deeper we dig, more we see that fingerprint. Deeper we dig, there's many evolutionists here recently that said, we can't believe that life came from nothing. Life is simply too complex. Life is too complex to believe that we came from a rock. Can't be done, it can't happen. Michael Denton, which is a biologist, stated this in 1986. "Although the tiniest bacterial cells are incredibly small, weighing less than 10 to the 12th power grams, which is in effect a veritable micro miniaturized factory containing thousands of exquisitely designed pieces of intricate molecular machinery, made up, although, of 100,000 million atoms, for more complicated than any machine built by man and absolutely without parallel in the non-living world. So he talks about how the living cell is like a factory, and you have all this motion and work going on. Darwin had no clue. He had no understanding of this. We have only understood this in the last few decades. And again, every day we're adding information. Every day we learn that much more about the human cell. Because as technology grows, so does our knowledge of things of this sort. Now, Richard Dawkins, which is a staunch atheist, one of the most vocal in the community, he even says this: there is enough information capacity in a single human cell to store the Encyclopedia Britannica, all volumes of it, three or four times over. Can you imagine taking all those volumes of books, four sets, and cramming it into the head of a pen? Well, that's what Yahweh did with us. And how he did it, I don't know. But isn't it fascinating that he was able to do such a thing? Sir Frederick Hull, Michigan British astronomer, said this: the likelihood of the formation of life from inanimate matter is one to a number with 40,000 zeros after it. One with 40,000 zeros. That statistically is impossible. It is enough to bury Darwin, he says, and the whole theory of evolution. There was no primeval soup, neither on this planet nor on any other. And if the beginning of life were not random, they must therefore have been product of purposeful intelligence. Now, one of the most fascinating parts of the body for me is the eye and the brain. And here, Dr. Roth, again, explains the complexity of both these components. It says that there are 100 million light-sensitive cells in the human eye that send information to the brain through some 1 million nerve fibers on the optic nerve. In the brain, this information is sorted into various components such as color, movement, form, and depth. It is then analyzed and combined into an intelligible picture. This involves an extremely complex array of interdependent parts. Did you hear me? 100 million light-sensitive cells. Can we even comprehend such a number? I don't think I can. And then it sends that information through 1 million nerve fibers to the brain. And this all happened by chance? It goes on and says, but the visual process is only one part of our complex brains, which contain some 100 billion nerve cells connected by some 400,000 kilometers of nerve fibers. It is estimated that there are around 100 trillion connections between nerve cells in the human brain. 100 trillion nerve cells. I think that number is really too high for us to even comprehend, that type of amount. But it shows the complexity. It shows Yahweh's design, and it shows that even the thought of this happening by chance is ridiculous. There's nothing to add that would support that evolution could do this. Whenever I think of evolutionists, I think of Job chapter 38. Turn there with me if you would. This book is one of my favorite books. It has a lot of truth here. But here Job, in the end, he himself, I think, receives a knowledge, a wisdom that he was without. I'm going to read several verses here, 1 through 19. And this is after the trials of Job. And here Job is trying to find an answer to everything that he's gone through, to the persecutions, to the tribulations. And here's Yahweh's response. Then Yahweh answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, Who is this that darkens counsel by word without knowledge? Gird up your loins like a man, for I will demand of you and declare you to me. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Declare if you have understanding. Who determined the measure of it, if you know? Who stretched the line upon it? Upon what were the foundations of it fastened? Or who laid the cornerstones of it? When the morning stars sang together and all the sons of Elohim shouted for joy? Or who shut up the sea with doors? With it broke forth as if it had issued out of the womb. When I made clouds the garment of it, and thick darkness a swaddling band for it, and marked out for it my bound, and set bars and doors, and said to, here shall you come, but no further, and here shall you proud waves be stayed. Have you commanded the morning since your days began, and caused the day spring to know its place, that it might take hold of the ends of the earth, and the wicked be shaken out of it? It is changed as clay under the seal, and all things stand forth as a garment. And from the wicked their light is withheld, and the high arm is broken. Have you entered into the springs of the sea, or have you walked in the recesses of the deep? Have the gates of death been revealed to you? Or have you seen the gates of the shadow of death? Have you comprehended the earth in its breadth? Declare if you know. Where is the way to the dwelling of light? And as for darkness, where is the place of it? And I could go on. He hammers Job here with multiple questions. I believe 38 all in all, might be more. But here we find that even Job was speechless. Job could not respond. Now, if Job received this kind of reply, think about what these evolutionists will hear when they stand before the great white throne at the end of this age. You know, in their wisdom, as Paul said, they have become fools. I'm sure when they stand there trembling and in shock, oh, there is a creator, they will know exactly what fools they are. It's amazing to me how anyone can look at the universe and life and understand how complex it all is, and yet still reject the idea of a creator. Evolution is nothing more than an attempt to allow man to usurp Yahweh's position and to be his own mighty one and to live a life free from his will. And again, from a moral standpoint, this will bring destruction to a nation, to a culture, and to a society. And that's why it's so important for us as Yahweh's people to understand this. So I hope and pray that we've gleaned from this message, and that if we're presented with this question, we can answer it with boldness. And may Yahweh bless you.